Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals Podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on today's episode, the second episode in our sitcom summer series, is Daisy Edwards. Daisy is a producer over at Jump Cut Studios and is the other half of the W-Rated podcast. Daisy has jumped on board to discuss with me one of the most iconic sitcoms of the 90s, and that is, of course, Friends. This sitcom ran from 1994 to 2004 and showcased the lives of six friends living in New York, muddling through their 20s, navigating relationships, big life changes, and of course, a good old catch-up at Central Perk. It's a show that really touched the hearts of many people when it came out and has had somewhat of a resurgence over recent years with it coming to Netflix, and recently they had the reunion show where the cast all got back together and reminisced over the show's impact on their lives, some of their favourite moments, and more. In the course of this discussion, we do touch upon that and, of course, some of our personal favourite moments and characters, how the show has aged somewhat over the last 20-odd years, and so much more. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation. This is Friends with Daisy Edwards. Hello, Daisy, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, pleasure's all mine. So you've agreed to jump on, very much like your co-host of W-Rated, Claire. You've very kindly joined me in this series. And your chosen sitcom is one that is probably an all-timer, isn't it? And
surely.
Absolutely. Like the recent months, it's obviously had a massive surge in kind of, like, I don't know, popularity or with the reunion. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, Friends. Mm-hmm. So I just want to get straight into it. When did you first see Friends and why did you choose to bring it to this particular series?
So I first watched Friends when I was probably far too young. My dad's obsessed with it. I don't know if he watched it from when it first started airing in the 90s. But I know that it used to be on our TV constantly. I know that he had all of the VHS tapes, which only managed to have four episodes per VHS.
Oh, right.
So you can imagine that racked up quite a big amount of storage space needed for those. So I think I must have, like, it must have always been on, but I remember being probably about seven that I was really paying attention and sitting there and watching them with him. And then I think at that point I started to just be like, I want to watch them, so I'm going to put them on myself. I think that's probably why I remember sort of that age. Bearing in mind, most of everything that was going on went straight over my head. But I just thought that some of the more fillery jokes were funny. But yeah, that's why I wanted to do it today, because, you know, whenever you think about, oh, what am I a fan of? Because, you know, obviously we, in our community, we love film and TV, like, just generally speaking. And I always go, oh, you know, I'm a fan of Star Wars, I'm a fan of Friends, I'm a fan. And I go, is that a bit boring? I'm like, doesn't even matter, because that's what I'm so, like, I talk all day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't quote Friends about three times. I have built friendships on the foundation of love for Friends, because it just is such a massive part of, like, my, it's just like the biggest pop culture thing that I had growing up, that I've just watched over and over and over again. So it's got such a big impact on me as a person, and specifically my humor, I guess, as well. Means a lot, reminds me a lot of my dad. My dad lives in Australia, so I don't get to see him. So that's a really nice sort of, like, connection that I have as well. So that's why I wanted to talk about it.
That's brilliant. I mean, that's a nice personal connection. And like you said, I think building friendships off pop culture, off humour in general, is quite a human thing. It's very universal. Yeah. So, yeah, and you're right. And Friends is one of those shows that's just had such a huge impact. I mean, I'm just looking at it now. It's 235 episodes over 10 years. And like you said, it's on all the time.
Yeah. I do wonder sometimes when people say, oh, I've never watched it. I'm like, how have you managed to avoid not, like, even if you're just flicking through, like, even seeing it? Because, you know, people are quite high and mighty about their dislike for Friends sometimes. And I'm like, come on. you must have watched a scene flicking through the TV, because it's just on constantly. It was on Channel 4, and it's on Comedy Central. Obviously, when it went on Netflix, that was like one of their biggest boosts in sort of the amount of people that watched that. So it does make me laugh when people say that. I'm like, you've really gone out of your way to avoid it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I don't know anyone who's not seen at least an episode. And as far as what you were saying, you know, again, we're very anti-snobbery here on this show. It's like, if you don't like something, that's fine, but you don't have to build your entire personality around it. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I will build my entire personality off the fact that I do like it, though.
And that's totally fine. And it's a fascinating show, because I'll admit, it's not one that I have a deep love for, but I've definitely seen a fair amount of it, because same as yourself, really, just grew up seeing it on telly all the time. And you mentioned those VHSs. I'm having like flashbacks of seeing those at people's homes, and like you said, they were massive collections. Like season one would probably just be like a meter long.
Yeah, it's crazy, really, like how we're still talking about it now, obviously with the reunion coming out the week of when we're recording this, and how it's still so integral to the zeitgeist of what's happening right now. The show finished 17 years ago and we're still talking about it as if it's airing. And I think that is really clear when you think about the different mediums it's had to go through, the fact that it was on VHS, and then my dad upgraded to the DVDs, which still, I mean, four episodes on one side of the disc and four on the other, it still took up about that, you know, like good 2 feet on the on the DVD shelf. And now I'm like, how do I not have them on Blu-ray? But then I'm like, well, they're on Netflix. So I do think that I would get them on Blu-ray, because like, having a physical collection, I think, is really important, because, you know, then it's yours. But yeah, it just makes me laugh, because it's like, well, whatever happens next, you can guarantee that Friends is going to be available on it, because people are not going to, people are always going to want to have that there to watch. So.
Yeah. And pretty much like all of the kind of sitcoms that I've already covered, there's always benefit in repeat viewing, isn't there?
Absolutely. For me, it's a comfort. I know that with other things, I like to watch them back to notice different things. And I probably did at some point when I hadn't seen them that many times, but now I'm like, it's like listening to music, you just know it off by heart and all of the quotes, and it's definitely a comfort thing. But it's funny, because I sit there and I talk to people who love it as well, and we both like, for example, my best friend who I live with, she's just watched it all the way through again, and I was like, nice. I just don't understand how people don't find this funny. I can watch it. I don't know how many times I've watched it all the way through. It's got to be in like the 20 like figures. And I'm still laughing at the same jokes. Like, that's how good they are to me. So it's definitely doing something right.
Absolutely. And I wonder, do you think that's part of why it's been so popular over the years? Is it sort of, you kind of said it yourself, like it's quite comforting to go back to.
I think because of the time it came out, the people that were watching it at the time it came out grew up with it. And because of like where that age group are now, I do think it's very much like a comfort thing. Like, if you think about, okay, so what we think probably like younger millennials, even older millennials, to be fair, they were probably more teenagers or in their early 20s. They probably definitely related to the show more than I did when I was seven. But you know, if it's that big a deal in pop culture and the zeitgeist at the time, and part of your personal like childhood and stuff, I think it's definitely going to be something that's going to stick with you, especially when I feel like we're part of the generation that does go back to those things a little bit more, probably because we can, you know. You know, even in the 80s, like you had to wait for that specific film to be at the video store to go and rent, and you know, a lot of people couldn't afford to buy them and things. So we have it at our fingertips a lot more than perhaps previous generations have. So maybe we take that in and fully embrace it, and they're like, yeah, I'm just gonna watch the crap out of this show now until it gets old. But yeah, I mean, some of them do, but Friends doesn't for me, so.
Yeah, no, that's great. And as you said, it's becoming more and more readily available. And what you said earlier, I remember that when it was announced on Netflix, it was definitely a big surge of people. It's one of those shows, there's quite a few on there that are just like staples now. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't imagine this the service without it, because like you said, so many people will stream and watch it. So I'm kind of curious then, sort of focusing a bit more on the show itself. I want to know straight away, do you have a favorite character?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's Chandler.
Okay, all right. So I feel like this is very telling about someone's personality.
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny because I wouldn't usually say the person, you know, there's two different questions. There's, well, who's your favorite character and who are you most like? And I don't know if I don't know if it's narcissistic of me to be like Chandler is both. But I think I think obviously growing up and then watching it, I know I've now got a favorite character, but I think growing up is very influential as well. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of my humor and the way that I think and the quips that I make to my friends are very inspired by him. So he's definitely my favorite. And I think it's because of the consistency throughout the whole thing, because I have to say, I have to do an honorable mention to the latter half of the series with Ross, because when he seems to go off the rails a little bit towards maybe like season 7 or 8, there is some absolute comedy gold there. But I don't necessarily feel that way from at the beginning, whereas I think all the way through Chandler's humour and just I relate to him in a lot of other ways, like characteristic wise. So he'll always be my favorite, I think.
He did my first suit when I was 15. No, wait, 16. No, excuse me, 15. All right, when was 1990? Okay, you have to stop the Q-tip when there's resistance.
I think, it seems to be a very popular one. I must admit, I always quite liked Matthew Perry's performances, because it was very dry and
very
witty.
Dry.
And like you said, he was the guy that got all the quips and all the kind of sarky humour in, which is the kind of stuff I grew up with. So, yeah.
Exactly. And it must have gone over my head as a kid. And I think that's maybe why I've come to like him a bit more now, because as I've got older and started realising what he's talking about, because I think the jokes that he was doing were definitely not ones that I understood as a kid, but as I've got older, I've gone, oh, right, okay. I think even to a point where there was one relatively recently where I've listened to it again and I've gone, oh, because it's like a lot, sometimes it'll be stuff that's related to America that you would just, as an English kid, you'd have no idea. But I think obviously like now we're a bit more attuned to having all this information at your fingertips. I've got older and I'm like, oh, right, that's what he's talking about, is it? Okay, cool. I get it now.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those funny shows that has kind of travelled well overseas, it seems like. You said there's like a huge, huge following for it over here in the UK. And yeah, characters like that are probably a good reason why. And I want to know, leading on from him, what do you think of his kind of relationship with Monica then? Because I felt like that was quite an interesting twist in the show.
I heard it shocked
a lot of people at the time.
I'm getting married today!
Woo! Morning, Ross.
I'm getting married today!
Yeah, you are!
Oh, woo-hoo!
You think you knew I was here?
Yeah, apparently people absolutely loved it. So I've read or seen that it was meant to not be, or potentially they weren't thinking about it being an actual long-term relationship, but people loved it so much that they were like, we've got to do something with this, which is interesting to know that now, considering I was never a massive advocate for Chandler and Monica, purely just, and it always happens when I watch it, because I really like Chandler and Kathy together, which is the girl that Joey went out with, who is the actress, and he was like in love with her when they were going out together. And I think I just really like that storyline, because it's like seeing Chandler in a way that you haven't seen him before. And then they end up getting together and it crashes and burns very quickly. And at the time, I think Monica is with Richard. And so that they both just make sense to me. And then when they get together, I'm like, oh, but I liked it. But you know, it worked so well, and the way that they did it, considering they weren't planning to do it long term, I think worked so well. And in the end, you're like, no, this is good. And also, it's like when you think back to episodes like when they go to the beach house, and like Chandler's like, oh, would you never go out with me? And he like kind of pesters her about a little bit about like why she doesn't see like boyfriend material in him or whatever. And I don't know whether they would have been thinking at that point whether they were going to try anything. But you know what, that's kind of the beauty of it, is that if that was real life, they wouldn't have known. So it's less contrived. It's more of a rolling thing of what would actually happen with these group of six 20-something-year-olds. You know, there might be a little wheel they won't lay, and then they do end up getting together. And it's kind of nice that they didn't plan it out completely, because it kind of seems like a bit more real life how that would just eventually happen.
Yeah, I'd never thought of it like that, but I suppose you're right, it does make sense for them, and they're quite a sort of odd pairing in a way, and because they've obviously known each other in this kind of group for a while, it means there can be a lot of fun kind of banter, and I guess the chemistry is kind of already there, so you haven't got to worry too much about it.
Exactly. I think I agree with you in that they are not one of these on-screen couples where you instantly are like, right, these two have to get together. Like, you know, with the US office, you're like, right, Pam and Jim, oh my God, please just hurry up and get, you know, it's just like that constant. And I guess people felt that about Ross and Rachel, right? But with them two, it wasn't ever like that. And I'm like, well, that's kind of more like real life. You don't necessarily have these people that are constantly like, if your friend's like, oh, well, you two just get together. It doesn't really happen. So it's quite nice to have a different, like, yes, you've got the TV, will they, won't they, classic trope. But then you've also got these two characters that you didn't think they were going to get together. They, you know, in character world, they definitely didn't. And, you know, what it ended up being was actually just a really nice classic friends first, realize that they're in love with each other kind of over time. And it was just, it's just a nice story, I think. And it's interesting, I think, as well, when they did the proposal and everything about Richard coming back in and it being a bit like, what's she going to do? I thought that was smart, because otherwise it would have just been quite smooth sailing, I think, after they got together.
I know. I think everyone was wondering, can she resist Tom Selleck in that mustache? Yeah. You know,
she's only human.
Exactly. But yeah, it's an interesting pairing, and I quite like Monica as a character as well. With Courtney Cox, I think brings a kind of vulnerable but sort of manic energy to that character.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That is quite funny. And I was talking the other day with somebody about a sitcom, obviously, and we're talking about odd pairings, and that, like you said, that is a trope in these shows. Like, you'll have the will they won't they main couple, and then you'll have in the background like this other sort of odd couple.
Yeah,
but they work, and I think it's quite sweet, because then you see people drawn to each other because of things that I guess they see in the other person.
Exactly.
In a way.
They
you know.
They complement each other very well, I think, because they are so different.
You opened all the presents without me? I thought we were supposed to do that together.
You kissed another woman?
Call it even.
Okay.
And there's just nice sort of like, you know, when they do the flashback stuff, but it's before the episodes that you would have seen actually previously. And there's like a bit in there about like, when he's comforting her, you just see like their own, like another bit that you go, oh, if I'd have seen that before, then maybe I might have thought something would happen. And obviously it's done retrospectively, but I think they did that quite well to kind of just flesh out their personal relationship with each other a little bit more. But that's what's so great about this show, right? Like, they're all lead characters in their own right.
Yeah.
There's not like the main people and then like the secondary characters. They all hold their own storylines and they all have their own relationships as pairs within the group, and I love that. There's like a massive number of infinite pairings between them doing, and you know, when you group those two together, what sort of like story it's going to be. So that's quite good. I like that.
No, it is. It makes it kind of more interesting to view each episode.
Bit of a variety.
Yes,
to each episode.
Absolutely. Since we already kind of brushed up against it, I want to know, what do you think of the Ross and Rachel story? Because obviously it's now kind of like you said, a Jim and Pam. Like, we throw these names around like they're the most common examples, you know. And again, sitcoms tend to draw on real life in some way or another, and so naturally we get invested in these emotional relationships. So yeah, what do you mm-hmm. think of probably the biggest one in the 90s then?
I, you know, if I'm thinking about it right at the beginning, The Will They Won't They, I think that's just one of the best versions of that trope, to be honest. I mean, I don't really know how, when it all started, it must have been quite early on in television, that sort of thing. But I just think that the way that they did it, from a sense of, you know, he liked her, he's always liked her, it made sense character-wise why they couldn't. It wasn't just like these silly little contrivances that meant, oh, they've, you know, like sliding doors-esque kind of thing. It felt like real life and the sort of thing that would happen in real life. I really liked the fact that it then swapped over and she liked him, but he was oblivious. I was like, that's just, I just think it's really smart, and they got a lot of mileage from that without it feeling like they were dragging it out. And I think they did the right thing getting them together so early, because I think if they'd have dragged it out even longer, then it would have been quite, there's always that thing though, you can write a Will They Won't They relationship well, but then writing the relationship when they're together, it has to be just as good, because otherwise it's like, oh, well, that was really anticlimactic. And I think they did that well, and I think it made sense for them to have problems, and then it kind of ended, and then they carried on, because yeah, it just would have, I feel like it would have been too nicely tied in a bow so early on. And I'm sure many people were like, oh, but you know, it's just nice then to have a happy ending, blah, blah, blah. But they did get it in the end. And I think they probably always knew they wanted to do that, so they weren't too worried about them being apart for like the later seasons or whatever. And obviously they had the baby together and everything. So I think they were smart with how they, I think the writers and the producers of that show are really smart at not overstaying their welcome in certain scenarios, and also managing to keep that consistency for all of those episodes. You know, I don't really feel like it ever had a dip. You know, when you talk about a lot of sitcoms, you're like, you know, but it, like, I love Community, but I know as well as anyone else that show went off of a cliff when people started leaving. So I'm just very grateful that no one major left Friends, and they all put in just as much love and passion at the end as they did the beginning, and it was like the perfect amount of time. And I think that's why I agree with the cast when they're like, I wouldn't do an actual scripted revisit. They said on the reunion the other day, you know, it would mean that you'd have to create conflict, when actually it's the kind of show that people wanted them to have a happy ending, and then it just gets moved on from. So I think I agree with that.
Yeah, and firstly, I want to say thank you for a bit of sizzle on a future episode that is Community.
Oh, yeah.
I literally, at time of recording, I've just booked it in, but I agree. Amazing. I'm rewatching it at the minute. But yeah, it's true. Like, we've talked about a couple of series already, and yeah, the ending of a sitcom is very tricky, and it's something that people get very invested in. And you're right, it's so true. When you think of big shows where people start to leave, some of the main cast leave, that's usually when you think things start to go a bit shaky. But yeah, you're right. Thankfully, the core six for this did stick around. And yeah, the ending was just what it needed to be. Everyone was moving on, and that kind of, the whole Will They Won't They with Ross and Rachel was finally resolved. And it was, you know, I remember watching that and thinking like, yeah, that's a good way to end this show. Like, everyone's little arc is neatly tied up. And yeah, the idea of them coming back, you know, now nearly 20 years later and doing another one would just be a bit, why?
I mean, there's so many people that want to see it. And you know what? I'd be first in line to see it, because I'd just be curious. But we don't need it. We really don't. And in terms of the ending as well, is that I obviously said that everyone gets like a happy ending, but it is very ambivalent, because you don't actually know what, you know that Chandler and Monica move and have the twins, but you don't see any of that. I feel like a lot of shows, maybe not sitcoms, but a lot of shows, what they do is do like a bit of an epilogue. Yes. And they'll finish it, but then they'll be like, oh, so and so months later. And it's like, no, I don't need to see that.
I don't need to know that.
Unless you're going to give me a show about that, I don't want to know. Like, I don't know. I find them a bit like stop-starty. Like, it's just like, finish or don't. But yeah, so obviously Rachel gets off the plane, but they don't say, oh, we're getting married, you know. And then Phoebe's married to Mike, and they sort of say about having a baby and stuff, but it's very left up in the air. And I think that's good, because it means, it's smart from the writers, because it means whoever's watching it imagines what they want to imagine, what happens afterwards. So
yeah, and unfortunately Joey got a spin-off, but you know, it happens.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that.
I feel like I had to bring it up. yeah
I know. I am actually curious to watch that. I've definitely caught an episode or two.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
I just could tell watching it, I was like, this is not it's not here. The spark, the magic, it's not here. I'm quite curious to watch it properly and see what to make of it.
All I'll say is fair play if you do it, because it was on. I used to try and watch a couple of episodes and then, just couldn't get through it. Because right, the chemistry is with these six guys. Mm-hmm. When you get them in a room, it's perfect. And the character of Joey is an interesting one, I think, because obviously I want to get your thoughts on it. I feel like he's the guy, I can't remember the name of it in literature, but there's the name of a character that you'll write who basically bounces around the edges.
Right.
And kind of does whatever he wants, and the core story will be driven by, you know, one or two more people. In this case, it's like you said, the two stable relationships really in the series.
Yeah, because I'd say Phoebe's probably like that as well.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Phoebe's the female version of that. So those two kind of just weave in and out and do their own thing, but they don't really drive the central story. Mm-hmm. So to take them away and like, let's give them their own show, it's like, yeah, that's not how that character is written. That's not how they work. Mm-hmm. They need to be on the fringes of what's going on, not the center.
Because you're not going to get the best out of what we know of that character in that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then that also makes sense why they probably tried to do it, because I guess, I don't know, you know, the spin-offs always come from, well, like Better Call Saul, for example. They haven't.
That
done
is the
spin-off.
Exception to the rule.
Yeah, they haven't done a spin-off of Jesse. I mean, I haven't seen the film. I know that he like, was the main character in that. But like, they choose someone on the sidelines that makes a big impact to do their own thing. I haven't seen Better Call Saul. I'm doing a Breaking Bad rewatch at the moment. And I'm going to be straight on it because I've heard amazing things. But yeah, I think it's very difficult to do a spin-off. You have to have the right ingredients for it to work, and you have to be aware of what you're doing isn't to recreate what you've done before. And I think from the sounds of what Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul are, it's taking the essence of what made that character great in that setting and changing up the formula so that it works for him. Whereas,
absolutely,
as you say, something like Joey, it just turned into, it reminded me a bit of Two and a Half Men, actually.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because they were set in the same place, because I think they're both set in LA, but it was very much like it's one of those multicam sitcoms, which are fine, and there's funny stuff in them, but I've never felt a massive connection to.
I'm afraid. No, it's fair enough. And again, the hype around obviously something like that, considering this show was one of the biggest sitcoms of all time, you kind of setting yourself up to fail. But again, I quite like his character within the show. I mean, I don't know about you, what did you think of Jerry and Phoebe as well, because like you said, they're kind of two sides of the same coin in a weird way.
Yeah And when you put them together, I think you have some amazing comedy, to be honest, because they both have, like you say, they both have that slight outsider sort of role to themselves. But especially towards the later seasons, Joey very much is very dumb. Phoebe is very smart. But they both, like, Joey says wise things and Phoebe says the most crazy. So it's an interesting mix of both of them. And when they play off each other, it's great. For example, when she's trying to teach him guitar, or when she's trying to teach him how to speak French.
Yeah.
Just iconic.
Your first line is, my name is Claude. So just repeat after me. Je m'appelle Claude.
Je découpe plow.
I love both of those characters, and I think they work so well because they go, there's a scene, as you say, it's driven by the other four or whatever. And then they just come in and just create this extra bit that elevates it so much more. And I just think they're very sweet and endearing characters as well. Like, those are the two where you're like, I want the best for them, I feel. Because I feel like the other four, they get themselves into situations that, you know, you're like, well, you did that. It was interesting, actually, talking about, like, Rachel, for example. I watched the reunion the other day. They were talking about how unlikable Rachel is as a character. Realistically, when you read her in the script. But the way that Jennifer Aniston plays her is in a very likable way. And loads, as I'm sure you're aware, a lot of people think Ross is a horrible person if he was real life. And Monica can be pretty neurotic. Chandler can, Chandler's humour can be pretty grating. But these two are just super wholesome, I feel. And are just super sweet and innocent and lovely and very naive on Joey's part. Like, it's just, it's just a nice sort of different layer to like the ensemble. I think I am a big fan of both of those characters.
Absolutely. And my favorite recurring joke for I think it might be the earlier seasons when Joey's on that show, I can't remember what it's called, a doctor show. It's like Days of Our Lives.
Yeah,
it's just like the most ridiculous dramatic TV show. And then there's like the bit where he has to die on screen, and he's like, just even in the show, he's hesitant to look down his elevator shaft.
Yeah, you sure you don't want to get in the elevator with me? No, yeah, it's great.
Well then, guess that's me. Anyone else need to go on the elevator, Dr. Wong? Dr. Wong? No. They only said you. Oh, okay. All right.
I love you, Drake.
Yeah, whatever.
Drake, look out! Did they just kill off Joey?
No. Now maybe.
Yeah, I feel like when I rewatch the show, I tend to look out for Joey and Phoebe a bit more, because like you say, they're not necessarily the ones driving it forward, but they are the ones that I think have just great character little moments, rather than thinking about this massive character arc. I don't really feel like they change really.
Not really, in the
seasons, but I think that's just because they are who they are. And like, especially Phoebe, she doesn't need to change. She gets a family. Which is obviously lovely, and Joey ends up being a kind of successful actor, but they don't fundamentally change as characters, which I think is interesting, because most stuff, you know, they are not the same person when they start. So
I think a part of me just watching it when I was younger was like, I wonder if they'll get together, because I was like, well, they paired these guys up and they've paired these guys up, so a part of you thinks, would it work? But actually I'm kind of glad they didn't, because they just work really well as friends.
I really don't think that would have worked. And I know they have made a few jokes about it in episodes. Yeah. And you can just tell how much they love each other as friends, that there isn't anything there. But you like in the wrong hands, that definitely would have happened, wouldn't it? If there was like a changing writing team, someone would have tried that. Someone would have tried it.
You could see it. What if we put these two together?
Yeah.
It's sort of been a whole season, it'd have been like, oof, no.
Well, a lot of people say that about the Joey and Rachel thing, right? Not a lot of people are happy about that.
It was more awkward, I remember that. It didn't really go anywhere from what I remember.
No, it didn't. I think the time, which I think was nearly a season actually, that Joey liked Rachel without her knowing, was really sweet and interesting. But it was one of those things that, you know what, I can't even remember how they end up getting together in the end. I think it worked well comedy-wise to play off of Ross. And I thought it was sweet that when they were dating and stuff, but I think they made the right decision to make it not go anywhere long term.
Yeah, absolutely. It just, I mean, like you said, the whole thread of the show was the will they won't they between Rachel and Ross, and if you mm-hmm. if you'd have broken that up permanently, I think they would have just alienated the entire fan base.
Well, I guess it's won't they.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, nope, switching this off.
Yeah, there's no question left anymore. What am I watching this for?
No, exactly. You know, and Phoebe does all right. She gets with Paul Rudd in the end.
Exactly. Who's the real winner here? Phoebe. Yeah. They're a great couple. I love them. Obviously, there's quite a few. We see all of the friends have different partners throughout the thing, and I always loved Phoebe's sort of dating escapades, because she's a real inspiration for women, right? She's so independent. She knows exactly what she wants. She's completely, utterly, like 100% herself. So it was really nice growing up with a role model like that as a character, I think, for as a woman. Like, and it's so nice that she eventually found someone that just like got her and was able to, like, because obviously a lot of her thing is about not having family. So that was a really nice way to end that, I think, that she got married to Mike. And it was fun having David come back, because obviously he was a great match for her right at the beginning. So I really liked that, you know, Hank Azaria got to come back. And I think that's just testament to like how good the show is, that no one ever felt like if they were on at the beginning that they were above it then. Like, it was always something that they wanted to, that I'm sure that they would rush back to. Like, look at all the amount of like the guest stars. Like, everyone was like proper itching to get on that show when it was huge, so they'd get loads of exposure. But still, I think people just loved it, and they wanted to be on there and experience it as well.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's true. I'm just kind of having a quick look now through the through some of the cast, the sort of recurring cast. I mean, like Elliot Gould is as the
brilliant,
Ross and Rachel's dad. I mean, that's a great get straight away. Maggie Wheeler as Janice, everybody knows that laugh. And I just realized she's only in it for 18 episodes. I was like, that's crazy.
She's made such a mark with that laugh.
Yes.
But no, I loved how she was reoccurring, because it's just like when you think that Chandler has got rid of her, she comes back. Even in like the 10th episode, when she's like 10th episode, the 10th season, when she turns up at the house viewing that they're at, which isn't even in the city, and she's like, oh, we're buying you next. She's like, and in the bloody when Rachel's waiting to have Emma, and they're in the waiting room. I think it was really clever the way they always made her pop up, because I'm sure that happens in New York. Like, you're always going to run into people that you don't want to see.
What a small world.
And yet I never run into Beyonce.
I'd imagine. And it felt, as a show, it felt lived in. I think the sets were excellent, you know, really well designed. There was a thing going around here in the UK where they were taking, I don't know if it was the set or like replica sets, just around. They were doing like a fair, and people could just go and walk on the sets.
Is it Friends Fest?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
But it's such a good idea. Yeah, I don't really know. So I went to LA a couple of years ago and went on the Warner Brothers tour. And I'm pretty sure that they've got most of the original coffee shop Central Perk stuff there. But yeah, I mean, at this point, I think because of things like that, there must be quite a lot of replicas. And even on the reunion, they went back and they'd got all the sets built again. And they were like, well, that's not the foosball table, because we actually destroyed that. That's not that because we stole that, you know. But the production design is amazing. Like, there's just, as you say, it's really lived in. There's so much personality there. Like, when you look at all the little details in Monica's apartment, for example, it's like, number one, that apartment is huge. And number two, it's just like all of these, like, it's just like the French poster, and it's just very like, you know, it's just not generic. It's completely opposite of generic, but you end up really associating what that looks like, because it didn't really ever change, it's just nice, because it didn't need to. Like, that was her stuff, and people moved in and out, and it changed slightly, but that would always be what we would associate with that set. So,
and again, I think it adds to maybe the comforting part of it. Like you said, that it's sort of that familiar thing of like, you're just hanging around with, well, friends, you know,
exactly.
Like a fly on the wall a little bit.
Yeah, and they have all these little things that you remember, like they've got the picture frame around the peephole on their door.
Mm.
And you've got like the big coffee cups in Central Perk and stuff that like they even make jokes about it.
Yeah.
But it's just really cool iconography that has like stuck with people, and you know, it means they can sell a load of merch from it, and so I don't blame them at all. I actually don't have any Friends merchandise, which is a real I've got one jumper. That's okay. But I'm really surprised at myself actually that I don't have more. Maybe I should give them more money than they already have.
I was going to say, I'm surprised he's not drinking out of like a giant Central Perk mug as we speak.
I would love that, actually, because I'm a massive tea drinker and I do love a big mug. So maybe I should get one.
Yeah, I think you shall. But mm-hmm. Yeah, you just mentioned the money. That's the other thing about this show is these guys were megastars off the back of this. I remember listening, yeah. I've given a shout out to these guys before. But one of my favourite little shows is one called Do Go On. These comedians go about, basically give you the history of a certain topic.
Oh, great.
And they did Friends, and they did mm-hmm. the whole history. And I was really interested to learn, like, you know, all of these guys were pretty new to the scene. It was one of those, you know, they want a fresh cast kind of thing. So they did it. Mm. And by the end of it, they're all like multimillionaires and huge megastars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's one of those things as well, obviously, the way that TV works and the amount of pilots they churn through is really interesting to hear from someone, from any of the cast members, from something like Friends.
Mm.
You just really don't know what's going to take off. And you can be like, oh, I really believe this is going to be my big break. The script's amazing, blah, blah, blah. But if it just doesn't hit right with people that are watching, and I mean, I don't really know the logistics of how pilots work, but I'm assuming it's like with test audiences. So you could just get a mix of the wrong people for that specific pilot. And that's it. It doesn't. There's so much sort of luck and coincidence with it that it must be. Yeah, I mean, we all know that like working as an actor is very sort of like uncertain and unstable, and you know, it's purely driven by passion because it's a very hard thing to do. So these guys must have been like, "How do we handle this? Like, we've gone from like not really being or doing anything." I think Courtney Cox was, I think, the most famous out of all of them at the time.
Yes, yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
Because I think she'd been in another show and she'd been in the Bruce Springsteen video.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, but even so, like, nothing compared to what they sort of, like, ended up being overnight. And I think looking at that, and I do want to do this one day, watch their sort of filmography, so to speak, as the six, because I find their career trajectories after Friends very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because definitely.
It's just that everyone's done, like, Matt LeBlanc did Top Gear. It's just so bizarre. Like, I don't understand it. I really don't. I would love to, like, look at the career trajectories of the six and be, like, just out of fascination about what happened. Kind of like, I know that we spoke about it before recording, sort of like looking at one of the episodes that myself and my podcast's co-creator Claire did about Lindsay Lohan, and a film that's quite obscure, happened at a time in her life that everyone's quite aware of, but I haven't necessarily seen it through her art. I know quite a lot about what's happened in these guys' as much as anyone else, what's happening in these guys' personal lives. But I haven't seen it mapped out through their craft. So that would be quite interesting.
I think it would be, yeah. Because that's one thing I've always kind of felt sorry for them with, is when you get something that is that successful, it's very hard to see them as anything else other than
where do you go from there, Friends, right?
You know,
if you're right at the top of your game, like, where do you go from there?
Yeah, I mean, the only one I can think where I've seen them in something and I really liked it was Courtney Cox in the show Cougar Town,
right?
Which is a lot of fun. No, do you know, I hadn't. This is a bit of a tangent, but my wife put me onto it because she started watching it and was like, "This is actually really good." And I was initially put off by the title, and I was like, "Oh, what?"
This doesn't sound like me.
No, but exactly. But it's very deceiving. It's
right.
I think it's written by the same guys it's the same guys who are behind Scrubs, for one thing.
Oh, really?
I didn't know Scrubs. Yeah. And I adore Scrubs. So I'm just like, okay, I'm intrigued. And she showed me one episode and it's very wacky and silly and just a lot of fun. And I was like, okay, I'm on board.
Okay.
And it's a brilliant little show.
You convinced me to give it a go now because that's not what I thought it was.
It's on Prime and it's a lot of fun. But yeah, like you said, apart from that, yeah, I haven't seen her or any of the other cast really in anything else where it's hard for me to see them as anything other than just the cast of Friends, which, like you said, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah, after that. And I think that's why, I mean, I don't know in relation to these guys, but for example, someone like Daniel Radcliffe has done some really cool, interesting, and Robert Pattinson made some really interesting moves in their careers off the back of being absolutely synonymous with one character, specifically sort of related to sort of on the younger demographic of audiences, which I suppose Friends was at the time as well, you know, in the way that they've moved away from it. I'd have to look into it to find out sort of what everyone, and obviously Matt LeBlanc did the spin-off and everything, but obviously Jennifer Aniston is probably the biggest one filmography-wise to have so many big rom-com blockbuster kind of movies after that. I mean, I don't see her as Rachel in Horrible Bosses at all. So I love her in that. She is not like Rachel at all. But I think maybe in the more generic rom-coms, perhaps it was hard for her to... But look, yeah, she did well. She did well. It's interesting to see what sort of they're doing. I know Lisa Kudrow had like another sitcom of some kind. I think it was like, was it like Web Therapy or something like that? I can't remember what it's called.
I'll have a little look now, because she was on she was in Space Force was the last thing I saw.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, that was with Greg Daniels, creator of The Office, made that with Steve Carell. It's okay, but just having a look now.
Of course, David Schwimmer was the voice of Melman in Madagascar, another formative film for me from my youth. I've got three much younger brothers, so my youth extended beyond my own. that's why I love Madagascar.
I'm just having a look. Mad About You, was that the...
So Mad About You is where she played Ursula. No, that's actually before Friends.
Oh, okay.
Where she played the character of Ursula. And they were like, we need someone like Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, why don't we just have Lisa Kudrow and sort of play a similar character? And that's really smart, the way that they were like, well, we'll just have Lisa Kudrow's Mad About You character as her twin... So they're in the same universe.
Yeah. That's genius.
They did it before Marvel did, just saying.
Yeah.
The Friends cinematic universe.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's loads of other people that are coming in out of the show, so that makes total sense. It is fascinating to me that a lot of these shows that we've talked about, like Friends, like I've done Parks and Rec already, and there's a few more coming up, that it sort of turns some of the cast into megastars, and you almost wouldn't think it, because I don't know about you, but I tend to think of, you know, A-list actors and that sort of caliber of being, or they're movie stars.
Yes,
but actually, this seems to be the kind of category where you can make movie stars overnight with a sitcom if it's the right sitcom, because it's in everybody's homes and everyone's familiar with them.
Exactly, I think it's really interesting the way it works, because some people, the way that they talk about actors' careers, they're like, oh, they never broke out of television. Maybe that's not actually some people's main goal. I don't know how much majority of actors want to see TV as a stepping stone to movies. Some people just want to work in TV. You know, obviously there's always the people that are like, no, I work in the theatre. And then, you know, people cross over in that way as well. So it's interesting I'd love to know if the cast were like, I want to be a movie star kind of thing, or whether they just wanted to be in TV. I know David Schwimmer was in theatre before. But yeah, I do think because of the way the pilot thing works, it's very much like that's how you break into acting generally. I think it's probably a much harder to kind of play bit roles in films and then make it big somehow. But it happens, you know, it happens with a lot of people, but maybe not in the 90s, maybe more so now. People do a bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah, probably right. And I mean, it's steady work. I mean, this show went on for 10 years and made them all very rich and successful. So I'm sure none of them regret it. You know?
No, I don't think that they do, no. Not when you think about that, like the amount of money that they have.
Yeah.
And the fact, I'm sure that they've got loads of wonderful memories too, but yeah, the money, definitely. They're all
so set. I am curious, do you have any sort of favourite moments then? Or kind of anything that leaps out to you?
Yeah, oh, definitely. A few of them are probably Ross in the later seasons, just because of the absolute absurdity of what goes on. I don't know if you'll have seen all of these specific moments, but he wears some leather trousers on a date.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and he gets them stuck and he can't pull them up, and he's like getting all like lotion and talcum powder.
Yeah,
he's on the phone to Joey like, what did? And it's just like, you would never let it get that far, but the fact that they push it more and more is just, it makes me like cry with laughter when he's like trying to pull it up and literally hits himself in the face. It's just like, you forget how much of the laughs that they do are like physical comedy. It's not just the one-liners. So that's great. When Ross gets the all of the spray tans on one side of his body, also just fantastic, you know, comedic acting. And I really like some of the episodes where they go somewhere else, because there tends to be quite a lot that happens in those episodes, like when they go to the beach house and Phoebe finds out that she actually has a birth mum, but that's like the whole Ross and Rachel 18 pages front and back scenario. I realise that all my moments are Ross. Maybe he is my favourite character after
Maybe
he is, but as I've mentioned before, Joey trying to learn French. Most of my favourite moments stem from how often do I say the quote that is in that moment, because there's a few where me and one of my best friends just every single day, just mostly Chandler's like throwaway lines, like when Ross comes in and he's like, hi, and he goes, are you high? So we say that to each other when if we end up going hi, we'll be like, are you? So it's just like inbuilt into us now. But yeah, oh my god, I could, any situation, my brain, I've described the way my brain works before to people is, when people say stuff to me or stuff's happening, goes through a filter where I'm like, is there a song, lyric, film reference or meme that relates to this? And this is all like automatic. This is not like something that I'm cognitively aware of. And I'll just say it. It's just in the, and I have to try so hard to remember whether these are people that know that I do that and therefore will either laugh or just be like, okay. Or are these people that will be like, is she okay? And it might.
Yeah.
Most of the time I've got it down to whether it's appropriate or not. And sometimes, like I said, you make friends from these things. They're like, oh, that's from Friends. And I'm glad that you watch it, because otherwise I'd be like an absolute lunatic. But yeah, there's always a reference, a moment that I think I go, this reminds me of Friends. Just so, because I've watched it so many times as well, that I'll just, things will pop up and it doesn't ever get old for me. So I'm tempted to just watch them all again now, to be honest, now we've been talking about it for so long.
Do you know what? Yeah, as I said, I am doing a Community rewatch, but this is the problem with me doing this particular series now, is that I'm getting, every conversation I come away from, I'm like, oh, I need to go and rewatch that whole show.
Yeah, but it's like that with sitcoms, isn't it? Especially ones that you've, maybe ones that you've seen before. Because when you connect with people and you talk about it and you go, oh, do you remember that joke, blah, 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 you're like, I'm going to have to watch the whole thing again now you said that, because I have to see that moment, and seeing that moment isn't enough. I'm going to have to watch the whole thing again. So I basically am always like, oh, I'm trying to watch all these new shows, but then there's all these shows that I've seen before that are just great to rewatch. Like The Office US I have on pretty much on a loop, as I used to with Friends. I've only done one watch through of Parks and Rec, but I definitely feel like I could go back to that. Community, round mm-hmm. and round. Arrested Development, round and round. Like, there's just so yeah. many that I have to kind of stop myself and be like, there are many, many TV shows out there that I haven't even tried yet. So maybe I should give them a go.
Yeah, as a problem I can very much relate to. And I was just cracking up when you were saying about all those filtering quotes through your brain. I can relate very heavily. There was a period when I was in school in particular, I used to just wind up my friends when they'd say something, they'd go, "That's a good song." And they'd be like, "What?" And I go, "What you just said, it's a good song title." And they're like, "Is it?" And
it's funny, isn't it? Because it's like everyone's brains work differently.
Yeah.
And some people exactly. just do not get it. But then you find the people that do, and then you're like, right, I'm home. I'm home now. This is where I could be myself. Like,
yeah.
I think the best one for me in terms of realizing that I was a bit abnormal like that at the time, I thought I was, is that I watched a lot of the films and TV shows that I got into were from my dad's side. And I used to go home to my mum when I used to live between their houses. And I'd be like, "Mom, I have to show you this film, blah, blah, blah." Put Shrek on. And she's trying to watch it. And I'm saying every single line just in the style of Mike Myers or Eddie Murphy. And she's like, "Daisy, you need to shush or we're not watching it anymore." And to this day, I still do it. And that happens yeah. with friends. And you know what? Sometimes it would happen when we're watching Friends in the living room or my housemate will be. And I walk through and I'm like, "Could I be wearing any more clothes? I just have to say it." But it's like yeah. even the most niche thing, somehow it's buried in there.
Yeah.
And it just can immediately pull it straight out. And I'm not going to lie, her boyfriend probably hates that I do that. She finds it funny, but he's like, "Oh God, here we go. She's saying all the lines again." And I am acutely aware of how annoying it is. But also, it's so much fun for me to do it. I get a lot of pleasure of doing it and then chuckling away to myself as I walk out the room. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's all that matters. And Friends is one of those, it's got an absolute plethora of moments to pick from and just throw at people when they're not expecting it.
Really does. Absolutely. Yeah, that's my preferred method of attack. Just to throw quotes at people, specifically Friends ones. So 99% of the time it's well received with something like Friends. Less so the more obscure things that I quote, but Friends is a good all-timer, I feel.
Absolutely. And I'll be putting in clips left, right and center into this one like I've done on the others, because it's just so much fun.
it is a lot of fun. I've actually got to a point where sometimes I'm trying to think of like, I'll respond to someone and I'm like, where's the gif of this specific moment, and I'm like, I could just make it. Maybe I'll just make them. And I'm like, time. I will not be making any money. Maybe I could get paid to make gifts of Friends. I'm like, no, I've gone too far now. No one needs that. But maybe I will one day, because it's just too fun.
Do you know what? It's something that I've already hit upon in previous conversations, and I can see this continuing to happen in other conversations. And that is, if you want to make a successful sitcom, it needs to be very memeable.
Oh my God, yeah. It really does these days. Like, and even like any TV show, it's weird. Like, Claire loves 90 Day Fiancé, and I'd never seen it. And I went round to hers a couple of weeks ago. And we were like, "Well, should we just put on a film, TV show, music?" And I was like, "Well, we'll put a TV show on so we can watch and we can chat, blah, blah, blah." And then we got onto the fact that, she's watching 90 Day Fiancé and she wants to show me. I was like, "Right, I need to see the episode with the guy, Big Ed." And it's just like, this the guy that's memed all the time. So I knew the meme before I knew the TV show. And I mean, that's the blessing and curse of internet culture these days, I guess. Lots of out of context stuff that you don't really know about. And then you end up learning about it retrospectively. So,
absolutely. And Friends is definitely one of those. I see memes and GIFs all the time from this show. And it never fails to make me smile.
Oh, good. Now I'm the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to know, is there anything else you want to sort of talk about with Friends, or anything that leaps out to you?
Well, I wanted to ask you who your favourite character was.
Oh, okay. It's a good question. I probably would say Chandler as well, because I grew up in a very sarcastic household. When I was probably similar to you, I was watching it probably a bit too young. But his jokes always made me laugh, just because of how dry he was and how witty he was. And he'd always have something to just throw back at somebody. And I always enjoyed that about him. And yeah. I quite like the I like reactive Chandler as well. Like when he's in shock or something, it's like you said, the physical comedy. All his gestures and manic energy comes out.
When he does the dance, you're not going to be able to see this on the podcast, but when he does the dance, you'll know what I mean if you're listening and you're a fan.
The dance.
It's
absolutely brilliant. I mean, like you said, that they all. I'm just looking at the cast now, and like they all have their moments, you know. But yeah, Chandler's definitely one that stands out. I feel like Ross gets a bit of unfair treatment.
Yeah, what's your opinion about people, obviously? And I think this has come up from it. I don't want to say resurgence because it's always been up there, even after it finished. But, you know, there's a lot of debate about the way that people look at Friends now and be like, oh, actually, you know, Ross is a horrible person if you think about it. You know, there are transphobic, homophobic, racist jokes in there if you're looking for them. Well, not if you're looking for them, they are there. You know, it's still a product of its time. It's definitely not anywhere near as bad as some of the other things. People are picking up on this stuff now, right? And I think... there's an argument to be made where people are like, you're just looking for it to tear it down because it's well-loved. Is that the right thing to do? Is it a right thing? Is it the right thing to call out these things? Obviously, on a much worse scale, you know, you've got the thing with Disney being like having statements about the fact that, you know, it's reflective of the times. The stuff that happens in that is a lot more damaging, I think, than one or two jokes throughout the whole series. I think... you should be aware of the things that are happening and how they're not wouldn't necessarily be well received or acceptable today. But also this whole thing with Ross, it's just like, let's just remember he is a character in a TV show, not a real person. Like, no, I think there is a line to be drawn there.
Yeah, that's it. And I always think if you're watching a show, particularly if you're watching one that's going back a few years, you have to take it with a grain of salt for a certain lens. And I do feel like it's a bit of a problem because the kind of consensus, the popular consensus, always shifts. And so trying to bring up things that have already happened, that have been done, dusted, recorded, and are there, trying to bring them in a line with your values now, it's a losing battle.
Well, that's, exactly. That's a personal thing, right? That's up to them. And I think I agree, I 100% agree with you that it's important to have the lens of this is... what happens, you know, and I really do think this is being quite tenuous with something like Friends, but I think it's important to apply to all media. Is having that foresight of not foresight, having, as we say, that lens of like, right, I'm watching something from the 90s. I was watching Extras, the Ricky Gervais sitcom. And there is so much in there where you're like, oh god, no, you can't say that, but that's the humor because that's, it's supposed to make you cringe, but also it was from what, like 10-15 years ago as well, so you're like, I don't find that sort of stuff funny, but it's making me cringe, and that's exactly what he's trying to do. So I think I think it's just important to be self-aware and think about these things. But then I do think a lot of the stuff about Ross, for example, him like, you know, he doesn't look after his child Ben anymore, and other, it's like, that's a great, really interesting character study, but also like, it's a TV show, like if you're gonna like, I don't know, it's not realism, we're not looking at it for realism, you know. It's one thing to criticize something because of what it does or doesn't represent, you know, not having enough diversity in there, you know, a few things that are quite offensive, or that's one thing, because it's talking about it as a product of media. When you're starting to criticize a character's choices, it's a little bit, as Joe would say, moo. it's a moot point, because they are characters that have been written, they're not, you know, if you want, I don't know, like, you can't have characters based on what your values are, because they're not you. So, and I do think it's very clickbaity. I think they're doing it for that.
It is, massively. And I was just thinking, well, the show isn't out and out going out of its way to attack or discriminate anyone.
Exactly.
You know, so that's fine. And as a character, I think like you said, he's kind of sweet because he pines after Rachel in a way. And I always remember that episode when you find out that, like, even as a teenager, he was willing to, like, take her to the prom. It's
prom.
Really sweet. It's
really sweet.
You think, but he's also a bit clueless. You know, the kind of the whole joke with him is that he's someone who's clearly very intelligent, but is also a complete idiot in regards to life, you know, and when it comes to life experience and picking women and all those
smarts.
Things. He's got no street smarts. And that's the kind of comedy in his character.
Absolutely. Because that's why it's so funny, right? The absurdity of this professor of paleontology accidentally having an English accent because he's nervous to teach a class and doesn't know how to undo it. Like, if he wasn't so smart, it wouldn't be. If that had been Joey, yes, it would have been funny. It would never have been as funny. Because it's about putting these characters in situations which completely contradict who they are. And that's where you get the comedy out of it. So I think I love him as a character, particularly when he goes a little bit off the rails at the end, you know, with the sandwich and...
You ate my sandwich?
It was a simple mistake. It could happen to anyone.
Oh, really? Did you confuse it with your own turkey sandwich with a moist maker?
No.
Do you perhaps remember seeing a note on top of it?
There may have been a joke or limerick of some kind.
That said, it was my sandwich.
Now calm down. Come look in my office. Some of it may still be in the trash.
What?
Well, it was quite large. I had to throw most of it away.
You threw my sandwich away. My sandwich! My sandwich!
When Rachel and Joey are seeing each other and he makes margaritas, like, it's just comedy gold. I really can't complain about it.
Yeah, because, you know, the guy goes through the ringer, you know, emotionally speaking, for a few years. So
exactly.
It's no wonder he has a nervous breakdown at some point.
What did you expect the man to do? Yeah, exactly. Three divorces, that'll do it to you.
That'll do it to you. I know. Absolutely ridiculous, but that's the point. That's his character is quite absurd. So, like you say, if you're getting offended by it, or he said a thing or did a thing that wasn't right, it's like, yeah, that's kind of the point. He's oblivious.
Yeah, we're not saying no one has said that these characters are perfect, and I think that's it's an interesting discussion that's being had. But I'm interested to read it, obviously, valuing everyone's opinions, but.
Yeah.
I do think that it's one of those ones where I've not really got on board with. I'm quite happy to see him only as a character, and I know that that's not necessarily the best way to go about things, but you know.
Yeah, and you know, for the most part, I think it handles a lot of things really well. I was just thinking about Rachel's sort of arc. I think is quite positive, because she sort of initially comes across as a bit of, you know, the sort of quote-unquote dumb blonde stereotype, but actually you get to know that that's not who she really is, and as the seasons go, as most of the characters, they all grow and, you know, become more confident and find their place in the world, and that's nice.
I think that's why it's so comforting for sort of the millennial age group, right? Because it's about and that's why they decided to end it, because they were like, well, they're not 20 somethings where they're like their friends or their family anymore. They've got their own families, and that's not what the show is about. I think that's what's comforting, is seeing these characters like trying to like have jobs and date and have like sort out their money and their family that they don't like. And it's just like so relatable when you're like, what the hell am I doing? You watch these people who are struggling in exactly the same way. And it's really comforting at the end. They kind of all just find their way. And it's just like that reassurance, isn't it? That it's like, it's a TV show, but it's nice to watch that happen when you're relating to them in that way.
Absolutely. And someone who's 26 and married, I still don't know what I'm doing. but I don't believe any of us really ever know. So
no, it's exactly. It's all just, let's just all admit it now, guys. Let's all just throw our hands up and be like, no one has a clue. So it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's interesting what you said there. Yeah, it's true. That was definitely the appeal of the show. And it wrapped up nicely. Mm-hmm. It's there if people want to see it. Like you said, all 235 episodes, I believe, are on Netflix at the time of recording.
There's so many episodes. Like, I can...
Oh, that's crazy.
Once I start, I just reel straight through them. Like, it's impossible to... to stop. It's very addictive to just have one more episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, was there anything else you wanted to bring up about it though? Because I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. And
absolutely.
It's a great show.
It's an interesting one. Obviously, the conversations started again about whether it really is that great or whether it was just popular. And I'm like, you know what? Doesn't matter. For me, I don't care how cliche it is that I love Friends because everybody else loves it. To me, and it's what we discussed at the top of the episode as well, I have a personal connection to it. So, like, I don't even really get involved in the argument to defend it because I don't need to. I'm not here to defend whether it's good or not because the people that love it. And it's one of the most popular, highest rated shows for a reason. It doesn't need defending. If you want to be like, oh, you know, because the thing is, it will always flip flop because there'll be people that say they don't like Friends and then it's boring and it's dated and it's nothing special. And you're like, oh, okay, fine. That's your opinion about it. But then you get the people go, oh, hating Friends isn't the personality, as we said. But then they, you know, it's like an ongoing back and forth. And it's just like, I'm just sitting here going, okay, you guys carry on. I'm going to watch an episode. I'll be over here watching Friends reunion, crying like a baby, you know.
I mean, that's it. Like I said, I'll admit I don't have the strongest affinity for it, but I can appreciate it for what it is, which is it's a great show. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's very successful. And comedy is subjective at the end of the day.
Oh, my God. The most subjective out of anything, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to like everything and that's fine. But no, this is definitely one of the big ones. And I'm really glad you've come on to talk to me about it.
No, it's been great. Had a lot of fun.
Good. So I guess really sort of to wrap up, I'd love to know, well, you can tell the good people where they can find you.
Yeah, sure thing. So on Twitter, I'm at Daisy Vic Edwards. And on Instagram, I'm Daisy Victoria Edwards. But you can find the podcast, W-Rated Podcast, at W-Rated Pod on Twitter as well.
Absolutely. And your co-host Claire was recently on, so we'll be getting double plugs for that show.
Hey, that's what we're here for. No, I'm joking. We love a lot of things, which you wouldn't know from our podcast because we hate on a lot of things in our podcast. No, we try and keep it like, we still talk about things that we like just in the context of stuff. I mean, we can't blame us. We're watching the worst rated films, so we're not going to love a lot of it. But we have fun.
You do. And as I said to Claire, like, I feel like you guys do it with a more positive outlook, you know, as positive as you can.
That's what we want to do. You know, we're not here to kick a dog while it's down. It's already at the bottom. You know, we're just here to kind of just shine a light on it and see what we think and see what everybody else thinks, because it's just we just find it fascinating. So, but I love the fact that you're talking to people about things that they're fans of, because I don't know about you. There's nothing better than having a conversation with someone about something that they love. Like, it's just so energizing. Yeah, I love
that. That is the essence of this show.
I love it. So wholesome, so positive. Big fan.
Thank you very much. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you, Daisy.
Thank you. No worries.
And there we have it. A massive thank you to Daisy for coming onto the show and sharing your love of Friends with all of us. If you enjoyed this episode, definitely go and check out W-Rated, which is hosted by Daisy and my previous guest, Claire. It's a wonderful podcast, an awful lot of fun. I've put links to all of that and her social media links in the show notes for you to go and check out. If you are enjoying this podcast, then definitely let me know. You can reach me via the social media links in the show notes, as well as email. And you can also leave me a lovely 5-star review if you feel so inclined. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to know that you've done that, because if you do, of course you get a shout out on the show. It is the least that I can do. A big thank you to Alex Jenkins, who designed the artwork. If you really like the look of the logo and what he's done, definitely go and check out his work. I've put all of the links to his website and social media in the show notes for you as well. That is it from me. I'll be back again next week with another guest talking about another sitcom. And as per the last episode, I'm going to leave a little clip in just to give you a clue. So until then, stay tuned and stay safe.
Wait, Eleanor, I have kids. I have three beautiful children, Tyler, Emma and little tiny baby Philip. Look at Tyler. Tyler has asthma, but he is battling it like a champ. Look at him. No, Eleanor, look at them. Look at them!
It's so realistic!
Eleanor, again, I'm not human. This is a stock photo of the crowd at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards.